Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mass. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go, oh God. Letting go, oh God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Doubter 5 or Larry Rhodes. We're on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LP FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is October 24th at 7 p.m., and if you're not listening at that date and time, then you're probably listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. This is our show number 117, so we're getting on up there a little bit. And with me on my right, we have Riv. Say hi, Riv.
Hello.
And on the phone, we have Wombat as usual. Hey, say hi, Wombat.
Hey, Wombat, what's up? I'm outside. People are looking at me. What's going on?
Yeah, loud and clear, right from the get-go. So,
nice.
We're all good. Okay, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, and sciences. Conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist and free-thinking rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you about them and how you can connect with them after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville?
No, I heard something about that.
I've seen you on there. You've been on there recently.
Yeah.
And Wombat, I know you know about it.
I'm actually kind of impressed. I didn't know River was on the new set of the latest, you know, movie, because I heard Batman was going to quit, and then Henry Cavill quit as Superman, glad, you know, that the package's still alive.
I'm sure he'd like to do a movie with Batman.
Please say hi to Will Smith for me. I think I've always wanted to talk to that guy.
Yeah, we'll do that for you, Wombat.
Okay. The sequel should be better than the first one.
Yeah, sure. Okay, yeah, we'll tell you how you can listen to the TV show, which is actually going on right now. If you want to switch your TV over to Comcast Channel 12 or what was the other one?
Station 6, 193.
192 on Charter. So if you want to switch over there, Comcast Channel 12, Charter 192, you'll catch it at the beginning, right at the middle of the show. And, of course, we'll hope you'll just reach over and hit record and come back to our radio show, because we want you as a listener. Okay, let's see where we were. Oh, yeah, in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. So, Wombat, you want to introduce the topic for tonight?
Actually, I was hoping you could, because I'm always discovering something new with this really cool conversational technique called street epistemology. And then recently I've seen you posting pictures. You looked like you had a really, really nice setup, and I thought we could talk about that and maybe some of the conversations that you had. It sounded like you had a really busy last outing.
Well, yeah. I've been going out quite a bit lately. I'm kind of semi-retired, I guess you call it. And I have been going downtown since it's been such a pretty day, pretty much every day for the last 2 weeks, in the mid 60s, high 60s, low 70s. And I'll just go down to the Market Square Mall, sit out and put up a little sign that says, ask an atheist or atheist chat, depending on which side of the sign you're looking at. And, I put out some books on atheism and have a few flyers that I hand out and see if anybody wants to come by and sit down and talk. And Monday, I did that. Nobody dropped by. I was kind of not depressing, but not certainly not energizing.
There's a lot of pressure probably going into that as well. Like, you know, people might want to stop by and ask questions, or they might feel pressured against doing so, you know, if they're with their friends. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. But,
okay. Can you stand a little closer to the mic? I want to make sure it's picking up.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sorry.
Stand closer while you're sitting there. How that works. No, it is. It's challenging, and it can be stressful. Some people come by and give you kind of a dirty look. I've had one woman, she walked by, turned around, and came back to me, and I thought, oh, boy, here we go. And she said, why do you feel the need to sit out here like this with this stuff? And I said, well, if I had Christian stuff out here, you wouldn't even have stopped, would you? You wouldn't have asked me that, would you? She says, no. But Jesus is my Savior, and she stormed off. I mean, that was it. I mean, and that was the end of the conversation. You know, I was kind of hoping that she would sit down and we could engage, but she wanted to do a hit and run rather. But I find it very peaceful. I like, you know, sitting out there and watching people go by. We don't have pigeons hardly. So I'm not your guy that goes out there and sits and feeds the pigeons. But I do enjoy talking to people, and of course, religion, gods, and atheism and superstition is about my favorite subject. So if they want to sit and talk, that's fine. I'm happy to. So, you know, there was what was kind of out of normal yesterday was about, I went down about 2:00, and there was a lady down there who was with CBS interviewing people about what they thought about the upcoming elections. And I sat down, and she came over and asked me if I'd do an interview. And it was only like 60 seconds, and she probably wouldn't use more than 10 seconds out of it.
Soundbite. Yeah,
soundbite. But she never did tell me when it was going to air, so I don't know when to look for it. It may have already aired and gone. I don't know. That happened yesterday, so who knows. But I don't have cameras or anything set up, so it's just gone into the ether after I do it. I know you have cameras when you do your street epistemology thing. And
I can tell you it makes it a little more complicated.
You what?
It makes things a little bit sometimes more complicated in the sense that you can get someone to sit with you, but they don't want to be recorded. And you took all the effort to kind of set up so you could do recording. So you're maybe sometimes turn away people just so that you can get enough recorded videos while there's still daylight hours. There's like its own realm of complication. I think just the table by itself could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. I did have a couple come by. They were older couple. I think the man was either close to retirement or retired. But they were telling me that they were cultural Christians. I've talked to cultural Jews before. You know, they still do all the rites. They still have the holidays, celebrate the holidays, but they don't believe in God, and they don't pray or any of that stuff. But
then they're atheists, right?
Well, they pretty much were. I mean, he said, I'm a cultural Christian. I don't really go to church. I don't believe in the Bible. I don't believe that God is real. But, you know, we were raised in a Christian family, and, you know, I like a potluck as good as the next person. So, you know, they celebrate the holidays and just follow what a normal Southern Baptist would do. But they just don't go for all the superstitions beliefs. I told them about the meetup, but they didn't show up last night. Of course, we're down there every Tuesday night, so they may choose to later on. So,
there's something interesting, I think, there about cultural Jews, cultural Christians. I think when I use the word, I tend to misuse it in thinking that you're just going through with emotions without necessarily putting a lot of thought into it, like epistemologically and what the Bible really says and how that lines up ethically.
Well, it could have been that they put a lot of thought in it when they were younger, when they were in school, when they had a lot of family around them, and now it just gives them a little bit of comfort to follow the old rules, not the rules so much as the celebrations, I'm trying to think of a word, I can't think of it. The motions.
Traditions. Yeah.
Traditions, there you go.
Easter can be fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, Christmas, that's a very commercialized holiday now, but it can be fun. I mean,
well, you can hide Easter eggs, and you can, you know, give chocolate bunnies. Yeah. And there's a secular version of pretty much any holiday. And actually, if you think about it, I'm pretty sure the secular version came before the religious version, and the religion.
We need to bring back Saturnalia. Just putting that out.
Yeah. The religion hijacked it for their own purposes. Yeah. Like the spring
equinox, isn't it?
It's not an equinox. Spring solstice, which they took over and called it Easter because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, theoretically, was originally, just celebrated because it was spring and that the snows were going away and you could start planting your gardens and just start the year of the return of life to the earth is what people used to celebrate it for. And then there's the fall, not equinox.
I think it's the summer winter solstice and Easter and
right.
fall equinox.
Right. And of course, they do,
The harvest.
Yeah. Oh, Thanksgiving and all that stuff, which they now call a religious holiday, which it really wasn't set up that way to begin with. But, there's every time there's a big holiday that had good natural and secular reasons for doing it, religion will come in, hijack it, and claim it for their own. Like the winter equinox was where the sun started coming back north again after its voyage to the south. And you could actually look forward to the spring at that point. The days started getting longer, but of course they claimed it as Jesus' birthday, or close to it, December 25th, which is when the sun actually stops going south. And then after 3 days of pretty much coming up the same place on the horizon, it starts its way back up north. And that's of course where we celebrate the, winter solstice.
Yeah, and you have so much symbolism going back thousands of years. That's pretty much what I find to be the basis and the continuation of pretty much all the religions that I'm aware of. It's all symbolic of things, and things just tie together, and they're meant to represent the celebration of this aspect or that aspect, and it's just all congruent with. I thought I heard something. Sorry, but it's all symbolism. And
all right,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Saturnalia is exactly one of the best examples of that. Is the fear of the
Saturnalia. Oh my gosh, you're right where I want to talk about.
Oh,
that's exactly what I want to
Saturnalia?
Talk about.
Saturnalia.
No, the Iliad. Didn't you say the same case with the Iliad?
Oh, I said Saturnalia, but the Iliad is also fun.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Well, go for it.
I was just going to throw out that. There was I'm playing a game called Assassin's Creed right now.
Oh,
it takes place in about 400 BC.
Yeah.
I think it's a great game.
Oh, it's so great.
I can't stand the interface. Of course, I'm a PC guy.
Sure.
So,
yeah,
you
know. PC.
I'm a PC. I'm playing on PC right now too.
Oh, it's so
but
hard to
But what's great about the game, they try to remake the world as authentic as possible. They bring a lot of historians. Uh-huh. They make great map is. More, kind of accurate. I mean, it's, of course, it's shrunk down, but like all the major continents are like more or less geographically accurate. And what's great is when you're walking down the streets, like as your character through this world, there's people who are praying at these giant statues. And like at first, it seems like it's odd, but you're like, this might have been what they've done back then, like prostrate themselves in public in front of everybody to show that they believe in what these statues represent. And you can start to learn about them one by one, and you realize that, like, their idea of, like, what gods are, and this is getting towards what we've, like, come to how Christianity formed itself, was basically there's a pantheon of different kinds of gods, but they kind of existed as, like, hey, really, really impressive ancestors. So, like, you've had, for example, the Spartans who believed that their royalty was descendants of Hercules. And so there was, like, a direct bloodline. And Egyptians, too, they had their own things, too. But what was cool is when the Persians came, and the Persians came in about, like, 400 B.C., they brought over this new idea of religion of it's not just a bunch of people that are, like, really, really awesome that you might be related to. There's two forces, and there's good forces and there's bad forces, and you need to stick with the side of the good. And if you don't, you're inside of the bat. And that was what they were bringing over with Zoroastrianism, or Zoroastrianism. You might have heard that before. And what was cool, and what happened was these two kinds of ideas sort of like mixed with each other, because now, if you look at like how the Catholic Church came about through that, you know, that particular area, they needed to adopt some of the pagan beliefs that were there. They needed to adopt some of the established Roman ideals that were already present, and like adopt some of like the saints and replace some of the gods that existed with popular saints, just so it was more accommodating to the believers and then spread the word more quickly. But they also brought up they also adopted the idea of good forces and bad forces, and that's when you started to see like there's a good side to Christianity, and then there's the dark side of Satan and all that stuff. And you need to be with the side of the good and team good, and not with the team bad. So a lot of things isn't so much as borrowing, but it's like an evolution. Because I imagine the people who were switching from Greek gods to Roman gods were like, they're just stealing all the things. I don't think any. They're just stealing all the stuff we already had. Yeah. I think this thing that we're saying about Christianity stealing stuff and adopting into a new religion has been going on forever. And anyone like willing to look into the history, even with a video game, just like a cursory look through how things come about now, would see that all these things are very, very strongly repeating with each other.
Well, saints are evocative, right, of some of the other kind of symbolic of people honored in society, representation of various figures, the deity and sub-deities. They became saints, represent different aspects, right? Yeah. St. Patrick was... The patron saint of it goes along with luck, but it's deeper than that. I forget the exact details. And then more recently, Mary was
Mary Magdalene.
Teresa. Her real name is
Mother Teresa.
Right. She was given sainthood, I think, last year, or the year before that, or something.
Recently.
Yeah.
But yeah, they say she did a couple of miracles. You have to do miracles post death, and they have to be attributed to you before you can reach sainthood. Which is, I guess, they can say anything is one of her miracles. You know, just point to something that's strange and say, "Oh, that's Mother Mary. Let's make her a saint." And they did that for her. They do that for a lot of people. There's a book out by Christopher Hitchens. You remember the name of it?
Hell's Angel, wasn't it?
Or something like that. Yeah. It was about Mother Teresa, and it was saying that, you know, she's not the saint that we thought she was living here on Earth. It's not that she was comforting all these people that were coming to her who were lepers and cancer and tuberculosis and all that. She was putting them in a bed and basically getting money for the care of them, and then using the money for her own industry, which is, you know, basically putting people in bed and getting money for them.
Spreading the message and so on. And
right.
She praised suffering.
Right. She said that suffering for Jesus was the highest calling a person could have, and she did not do anything to ease that suffering. The beds were nothing more than just mats on the floor. Don't think of a hospital. And they were crowded together, and, you know, she would go around asking for money for the care of these people, but did not actually do the care.
Yeah.
Another whole story. I can't remember the name of that book. I'm going to try to look it up while you are. Go ahead and talk.
Can I throw out I know this is a bit of a rewind, but, again, with that video game that takes place in ancient Greece, it's kind of cool. I think it's going to have a very strong impact to people, because everyone there, you're suddenly living in a world and engrossing a lot of your time in the mechanics of the world and the politics of the world, where everyone believes something that most people who play the game won't. And every single person in that game, or for the most part, is a staunch, ardent believer of like the Greek pantheon of gods. And they'll talk to them, they'll pray to them in the streets, they'll dedicate food to them. And it's very closely mirrors, maybe even more so, to what you'd see like outside when you go to like church, or if you talk to people outside and they talk about how much they believe in Christianity or they wear a cross. Yeah. And I think it's cool for at least players who are really young to at least be exposed to a different culture, even if that's through a video game, but at least participating as an active agent, realizing all these guys are doing the exact same things that I see in reality, but I don't believe in any of these things, and I know their gods aren't real. So what is it with reality that confirms it for me? Because if I can see the same things, what makes it any more real for reality than it does for these guys? Maybe I could start asking myself some questions there. I
think games can be very educational. And a lot of, more and more they're using games for that purpose. They're putting more and more information in games that will help the common user come out with better information about the period of time that they're playing in. I think it's great.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. Let me go. So you had went to do your talks, and you had a table set up. What was cool was most people who I've seen do conversations with or open with people typically have like a sign that's more general or neutral in its tone and focus more on having the conversation. But something I still respect about you, but that was something I'd still like to get your feedback on, is you had a sign that was, or a sign as though it was very much, I am an atheist. I have an atheist memorabilia swag I can give out. Let's come and talk. Well, I tell you, when I was in Knoxville, that was very useful, because when I was looking for meetups, the first thing I searched for was atheist, and I was surprised that only your group showed up. And when you're telling me about all these other groups, I'm like, wait, I've only seen one atheist group, and that was what I was looking for, the word atheist.
Well, that's the very reason I put that group there and started that group 16 years ago, was to use the name. It's a perfectly good appellation. It's very descriptive. There's nothing to be ashamed of it, but people are. They won't want to use it. We had a couple came to our meetup last night, an older couple. I think they were both retired. And I asked them how they found us, and said, well, we just went online and looked for atheists, and we came up. And that was my argument to the other group. It was the Rationalists of East Tennessee, which I'm still a member of their group. But they wouldn't use the word, and I said, you need to use the word. But they never would, and I think they're finally coming around a little bit to it, at least more so. But they certainly haven't put it in their name, and people aren't finding it, you know, when they do a search for it, which is a problem.
Something I want to add in terms of setting a booth up and asking questions. So when I was in past several semesters in college, I had this sign I set up every anywhere from twice to three times a week. I had this sign up for the Secular Student Alliance, and it read something like, I revised it, but the revision was, it was different colored letters and big bold writing, the sign out. And it said, if I recall, do you value truth and reason? Are you a good person? Does a book define, or does a book dictate morality? Come, let us reason together. And so I'd sit there, and people would come up and ask questions, and typically being, you know, defensive about it, that's expected, you know.
Yeah.
But I made a lot of progress in those ways. I didn't record it in any way, but I did that for a couple of years, and it is fascinating. You know, I think people like to think they're good people, and they tie in their religious views as a part of them, right? So when you're questioning what they believe, it's interpreted as you're questioning them and you're accusing them.
Right.
And they take it as a personal assault. And so almost every time you have to just break it down to say, says nothing to do, well, can't say it has nothing to do, but I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm addressing what this book says and asking you what you think about this book and how does it affect the way you treat other people and you know, prepare for the future generations and so on and so on. And so that becomes, I think, a much more peaceable conversation. But if I never make that distinction, basically every time I find that if they began opposed, they'll walk away opposed, and maybe even worse so, because they've felt accosted. And, you know, like you're, you know, booth in the park, in the central square, you know, why are you doing this? Why, you know, I'm trying to get people to think. But it's just complacency. It goes back to the cultural aspect of it, you know.
Right. One thing that I'd like to I like to bring up when people are talking to me. There was a guy who came in, he sat down, and we were talking a little bit about God and our souls and the afterlife. And he was getting a little bit testy about, you know, some of the things that I was finding problems with. And I said, no, don't take it wrong. I know that you sat down here because you have my soul in, you know, you're worried about my soul. You're worried about me. If you weren't worried about me, you'd just walked right on by and you wouldn't have said anything to me. I said, I recognize that. I said, the thing about it is that I am worried about your freedom, your free thought, how you're tied up to the church and basically mind slave to the religion that you were born into. And that's why I'm sitting here.
Oh, my God.
So we can have this conversation. I know you don't like to go there, but I think it's real and I think we need to talk about it.
Yeah. Again, it all goes back to like how it's taken, right? If someone's immediately thought, okay, now they're assaulting me, that's one reaction. But if they're open-minded, it depends per person. You know, when I mm-hmm. talk with friends, when I talk with family,
yeah.
For instance, on a name, but a younger person in my family, notably younger, was asking questions and was just presuming, well, of course you have Adam and Eve and you have this and you have that. And I just asked the question, have you ever heard about Hercules? Have you heard about Vishnu? Have you ever heard about Asatru? You know, oh no, what are those? And so, well, you know, there are various stories told in the past, much like stories are told today.
Let me throw the question before we hit the bottom of the hour. What do you guys, and neither of you guys can answer the question, I think I'd focus more on this in the second half anyway, but what do you guys think you could have done to improve the current talk that you've had so far? The most recent talk that you've had where you were sitting at a table openly and inviting people to discuss religion. What do you think you could have done differently to have a much more beneficial communication with the person sitting in front of you?
I think that's a very good question. I think we ought to think about it over the break. And we'll have more information, hopefully, when we come back. So how could we have improved our last discussion?
Yeah.
So we'll take a minute to think about that. We're going to do a musical break. Right now, the music that we're going to do is The Wave of Reason, A Wave of Reason by Symphony of Science. And we'll have a little station identification, and then we'll be right back in about 5 minutes. Here we go.
When you are studying any matter or considering any philosophy, ask yourself only, what are the facts and what is the truth that the facts bear out?
Science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe. If we are not able to ask skeptical questions, to be skeptical of those in authority, then we're up for grabs.
In all of science, we're looking for a balance between data and theory. You don't have to delude yourself with irony and fairy tales.
The same spiritual fulfillment that people find in religion can be found in science by coming to know, if you will, the mind of God.
The real world, as it actually is not evil. It's remarkable. And the way to understand the physical world is to use science.
There is a new wave of reason sweeping across America, Britain, Europe, Australia, South America, the Middle East and Africa. There is a new wave of reason where superstition had a firm hold. Teach a man to reason. Think for a lifetime. Think for a lifetime.
Cosmology brings us face to face with the deepest mysteries, with questions that were once treated only in religion and myth.
The desire to be connected with the cosmos reflects a profound reality. We are connected, not in the trivial ways that astrology promises.
It's a way of thinking. A way of skeptically interrogating the universe.
There's a new wave of reason sweeping across America, Britain, Europe, Australia, South America, the Middle East and Africa. There's a new wave of reason where superstition had a firm hold. Teach a man no reason. Let's all think for a lifetime. Think for a lifetime. Superstition had a firm hold. Teach a man no reason. Think for a lifetime. Think for a lifetime.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Okay, and welcome back to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Daughter Five. With us today we have River. Say hi, River.
Hello.
And the Wombat on the line. You still there, Wombat?
Wombat!
And let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 16th year. ASK has over 880 members now, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go on Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. Another free thought group here, another large one, in Knoxville is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. And they've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions in the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday in the Goins Administration Building and the Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too busy, too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Then there's the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in God, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though. It's on the fourth Sunday. So go down to the old fairgrounds, the World Fairgrounds, and look for the International Building. Be there about 10:30 on Sunday morning and join the fun. We also talked about the Atheist Call-In TV show. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it almost every Wednesday. It just went off the air at 7:30. It goes from 6:30 to 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12, Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find some of their archives on archived shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. If you're interested in getting involved in the TV or the radio show, just come to an ASK meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And that's all for the announcements. If you do want to call in and join our conversation, you can call us here at 865-333-5937. 5937. That's in Knoxville, 333-5937. Be happy to have you join the conversation. Our phone line is open. Okay, where did we leave off? We were going to talk about how we could improve our conversations when we meet people to have discussions on the street or at our table.
Well, I'm a firm believer of critical feedback as a way to improve yourself. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we could sit here and around the table and be like, oh, man, Christians, they just don't get it, right? Yeah. They just don't get it. Yeah. We could try to sit on back.
Wombat, can you stand a little closer to the phone? You're not coming in very well.
How about this? Am I coming in good?
That's a little stronger. That's sounds
right.
Better. Yes,
hopefully.
Okay.
So what I'm thinking, what I'm hoping is we can probably try to look at what we've been doing so far and try to optimize it from there on out. Some of the things I would love for us to like maybe think about it first, and then maybe we can like throw out some things as well. But like, Larry, what do you think you could have done better with the last two times that you went out?
There was one guy who sat down, and as soon as he sat down, he kind of set the tone as confrontational by saying, "Okay, convert me. You know, I'm a Christian. Convert me." And I took it as a challenge because of the way he brought it to me. But in the future, I think I'll just say it's not my job to convert you. You have to convert yourself. If you ever do, it will have to be something you do. I can only give you tools to do it if you want to. There are several people out there right now who are on the fence, who are struggling one way or the other. Those are the people I'd like to talk to. But for, you know, people who are loud and proud in their Christianity, I'm not going to convert you. I wouldn't be able to anyway. But it's something you have to do yourself.
And I would say. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go for it, Ray. Okay, Larry. I would say that I'm always happy to see people just be atheists in public, and I think that's always like a good positive, you know, thing. Especially when it's like a war hero, like, you know, like an old established guy. You're not just some young dude who's in a fad. You're like, you look like you've seen a lot of stuff, and so it's always cool to have like that represented. Though, when people see the word atheist, there's a lot of loaded terminology behind that,
and that's why I'm out there.
That goes with that.
One of the reasons,
right? And it, but it also goes for, and there's no need for. Hopefully I'm not coming off in a way where you feel like you would need to defend yourself, because I'm supporting what you do. But what I'm saying is, if you go out with a label that other people misinterpret, they won't even give you the chance to sit in front of you and hear what your position is, because they're gonna judge you from afar. And if you say, I'm an atheist, and people think, oh, atheist, he hates God. Okay, fine. I don't need to talk to that guy, because I've already surmised his whole position. I don't see a good reason for me to even have that kind of conversation.
I consider that an honest appellation. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm an atheist. That's what I want to talk to him about. Now, if you sit up and just say, I want to chat, and then they sit down and you turn the conversations that way, then, I think that that's less than honest. But
let me get to a point, because I don't want you to get defensive. But when I'm having my chats, it's about anything. But if you're having chats about atheism, people are going to judge you before they even sit at the table.
Yeah.
And that colors a conversation. And that's a real thing that happens. So what I try to do is, with a neutral tone, figure out what the person wants to talk about, and we'll talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Uh-huh.
And if they bring up religion, we'll talk about religion. But if you bring up a sign that says, I'm this, and people don't know what that is because they heard it from other people, they're going to bring that weight to the conversation. And if you aren't willing to handle that immediately, as soon as the conversation starts, if someone says, hey, convert me, you have a completely different challenge to deal with, regardless of whatever that person wants. You're going to need to start to define terms and get agree on things. And that's something that might unnecessarily bias the conversation. I think it would be interesting if you had tried it with, hey, I want to discuss religion with you, or Christians, let's talk, or something like that, if you want to have that religious conversation. There's definitely different ways that you can go about it. But it would be interesting if you had maybe tried to maybe define, maybe a sign that says, hey, atheism means I don't believe in a God. Would you like to talk about that? And you have a sign there as well that just defines the term. That way people are walking by, at least understand where you're coming from. Because a lot of people might take that as a controversial statement because, again, you're challenging what their personal conclusions are. And that can be a really difficult thing for a lot of people to have, to start a honest conversation back and forth. What do you think?
Well, or real quickly, or perhaps feeding off of that, something like, I'm not convinced by the evidence or something. I mean, maybe
like something
maybe,
like that would be good. Yeah,
nuanced, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking for a good reason to believe in God or something like that. Like some other way of doing it other than, hey, I'm this thing that your pastor says is evil. Now let's talk. It's like, no, those people already have a misconception of the term already. And for them to walk past you and abandon it makes it, is a lost opportunity to have like maybe a really cool conversation with someone.
Well, I'll think about what I might put on the sign besides atheist, but I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing. So we're going to see how it goes.
Well, so in my recent experience, I can look back to a conversation with a family. I can also look at conversations when I was doing the booth at for Secular Student Alliance. And I guess more fresh in mind is conversation, I guess, with family. And I was asked the question, oh, it's, there are a lot of, just so many false equivocations being made, but one of the ones being broaded was, well, you look at the news stations, you look at the Bible, and like, you know, which version of the Bible is correct? And now, reactively, I said, none of them. And so, and then so that started a reaction, and then so I went back on it, and I said, well, let me parse that out. What I mean by it is that over centuries, you know, the separate authors and separate books have been cobbled together, you know, interpreted this way, written this way for different purposes. You got the New Testament, you got the Old Testament, and sometimes people think, well, the Old Testament doesn't matter, and then there's just a lot of confusion around it. And it's not inerrant. It's a book like any other book. And that's more specifically what I meant by it. What I should have done, I think, is asked something along the lines of, when you say which version is accurate, let me follow on that and say, which version of the Bhagavad Gita do you think is accurate? Something like that. I don't know. Maybe that's going off base from what, you know, family was asking, but just something to engage the thinking of it without derailing it entirely. Or maybe I could tweak that a bit.
I'm going to throw out something real quick. There was a time when I was in grad school where I was asking for, like, where we had a presentation coming up for a bunch of, like, people who were coming to, like, judge our research and see if they'd give us, like, additional money. And so I had my own little project. And there was another girl who had her project as well. And I gave my presentation, and people were like, hey, Tyrone, I think your slides are too long, or I think there's too much words in your PowerPoint presentation. I'm like, you know, I'm actually pretty good with this. I think I'm pretty confident with this. I can manage this on my own. And someone would say, I actually think there's too much pictures in this part. You might want to, like, slim it down a little bit. I was like, no, I think I got it. Another person said there's too much animation. I was like, no, I think I understand what you're saying, but I can justify why the animations are here. And I'm not arguing with anyone, but I'm at least giving my, you know, the feedback so that way they'd know where I'm coming from. The other girl did her presentation, and people gave her critiques, and she said, no, that's a good point. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. When it came time to give our presentations, that girl didn't change any of her slides, and I didn't change any of my slides. But the next time I asked for people to come and listen to my presentation, nobody showed up. But everyone showed up to the girl's presentation. And I found that one of the coolest things about critiquing other people is that you have to have, particularly if your goal is to correct someone else, you have to have the mindset of, I'm willing to accept what you're saying. I may not follow it, but I don't need to tell you that, because I'm here to try to get, you're giving me a benefit by at least showing that you give a damn and listening to what I have to say. And I think if you take that kind of attitude with you when you go out to do conversations with people, that's going to be the biggest impression that you get off. If you have the position of, I'm right, how I'm doing this is good, I don't need to change anything, you're going to throw that at another person and they're going to think the exact same way. And you're going to have a much bigger hurdle to get them to be more convinced that you're right or that you have a position that's worth listening to. I found that it's really good to at least be open to the idea that the person's right, be open to the idea that you might be wrong, and at least spend most of your time listening rather than saying, hey, what I have is good enough. I question if you guys, not so much question, but I challenge you guys to want to improve over the last time that you've talked. And it won't be in the same way that you've done it already. I think there's something that you could actually do better, and I would encourage you to do it, but you don't have to. But I would recommend at least that you have that kind of mindset.
Well, I do appreciate that, but also let me add to that. I think it ties in well with it quickly. So I like the philosophy of Aikido, of the martial art and the philosophy both. Because in Aikido, there are very few offensive moves. They're just something to initiate conflict. It's all about staying calm and letting the opponent tire themselves out and manipulating energy and flow of body and kinesthetics and all that. And it's very practical and very deadly if you use it to be deadly. That's why it requires moderation on your own part. But the philosophy, the philosophical aspect of it is everyone is your teacher and everyone is your student. So, it's in a nutshell, right? You're constantly learning from them in a way in that bout, right? They're throwing things at you, you're returning it back on them and trying to resolve the conflict with the least amount of harm to both you and your opponents. So, in a way, it's almost like it meshes up really well with it. I don't know if I'm reaching too much, but it's always been in the position of, I could be wrong on this, but let's try to bring this resolution peacefully and try to find what the truth really is.
And before we went to the break, we were all going to think about what we could do to improve our discussions with people that we meet. What did you come up for yourself?
I'm under the impression that there will never be a point in time where I will ever think that I'm too good to not improve over any aspect of the work that I'm doing. And I think it's absolutely imperative that I try to share that with other people, because atheists are trying to catch up. We're way behind in a game that's all about rhetoric.
Yeah, but have you thought of anything specific? I mean, you're talking in general.
Yeah, I can throw it out. Oh, definitely, I can definitely throw it out. But we have a position where people don't understand where we're coming from, and people mostly don't even think that they can have positive conversations with us. So what I'm trying to do is figure out what can I do to have a good casual conversation with someone that doesn't make them upset. And they might get upset, but what can I do to try to, like, figure out why they're getting upset, figure out what I can do to improve that methodology. And it's not going to be a one-bang thing. I'm going to mess up a lot of times. In fact, last time I did my conversation, the last one that I had was at University of Kentucky, and I had done like maybe 7 talks in a row, so I was getting kind of tired. And I had to realize that, like, I have a stamina issue when I do multiple kinds of talks like this. But one of the talks I was doing was this young college guy who basically wouldn't change his mind no matter what. He was like saying, listen, I don't care what you believe, I don't care what kind of analogies that you want to bring up, I'm not changing my mind, it is what it is. That's how it's going to be. And I'm just scrambling trying to figure out, okay, well, let me try this analogy, let me try this. I have to realize that sometimes even in a short talk, like as Riz said, like the path of least resistance might be the most effective one. If I can get to the point where I'm just saying, hey, I have a good 5-minute chat with you, you may not change your mind, but I succeeded in showing that you can have a good conversation with an atheist without either of us getting heated, I'm fine with that, and I can let the person go. Rather than trying to come to like some terms where I could try to like figure out some way to make this guy be a little bit more doubtful about his position, I need to reassess my goals and try to figure out what's the best way to kind of have a conversation with someone that doesn't get them agitated at the end. Because by doing that, they will be in a much more likely position to dismiss everything I said based solely on emotion rather than actually assessing some of the logic that I
makes sense. Defend. Yeah. I try to do that as well.
And kind of like Socratic method of basically, well, at least Socratic method, you know, Socrates, right? Placing pebbles in shoes, right? Maybe a way to turn that around in this context would be something like placing pebbles in shoes, but flat pebbles rather than sharp pebbles.
Flat pebbles.
Yeah, something like
irritating.
Yeah,
right. Like you have me thinking, but at the same time, I'm not angry or something. And of course, it's no easy way to just, this is how to approach everything. You know, it's per person. And it's like an art, you learn it and so on. But yeah, I think an interesting point of emphasis is made there that, and when it comes to spreading, you know, basically, I like to think of it as positive rationalism, maybe. So much of it does go in, unfortunately, it's very frustrating, but so much of it is led by emotion. You know, advertisers figured this out long, long ago. You don't sell by intellect, you sell by emotion. You know, it's like Noam Chomsky was on about how if we actually had free markets, then rather than the kleptocracy and everything, corporatocracy, then an advertisement would consist of here is a product, here is attributes, these are its functions, this is its price. Well, we don't. You see, emotional appeal, buy now. So, you know.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Hmm. That's a good point. I think there's definitely a lot of aspects when it comes to trying to not just talk to someone, but try to have a conversation that challenges, that's going to at least make them challenge what they believe. And if you could do it in a if there's a less assertive way of getting it that done, it could be mutually beneficial for both people who are in that kind of conversation. One, to show that you can actually have a conversation without it getting heated. And two, it's going to keep that person thinking about the conversation in a less biased format.
Yep, sounds good. I agree. One of the problems I had with that person that came down and challenged me, it came out later in the discussion that he was a Trump supporter, and I'm certainly not a Trump supporter. And we ended up doing a lot of staring at each other, you know, trying not to to tee each other off, but at the same time try to have a conversation.
Right.
But, I mean, when he stood up and we told each other we enjoyed the conversation and we shook hands and we both went our way. So I think it came out. If he said that if he was back in the area again, he can sit down and talk some more. So I think the door is open.
Okay. Okay. That's good. That's always good. That's always a good thing to hear. Even with the guy that I was talking to at the UK center, he got me a bag of candy later on in the talk. So like, It's always good to have like a sign of goodwill, you know.
So you're doing this for candy, is that it?
Yeah, basically.
The secret's out.
there is always a challenge of trying to figure out what you could do better each time you go out. And the hardest thing to get, I found, is critical feedback. And I found that people who don't care about what you're trying to do, or the people who don't care about atheism, apathetically theist or apathetically atheist. People who think, oh, of course there's no God. I don't need to be activist. I don't need to go out and talk to anyone. I don't need to offer advice on how you can get better. They give the same amount of help as the people who absolutely believe in a God and want to send you into the fires of hell. And so what I found really valuable are the people who are willing to at least hear you out and offer some sort of feedback. What I have right now is like this really cool messenger group. That's called the League. It's for like street epistemology enthusiasts, but really anyone that's like trying to go out and talk to people. And this group of people is really nice. If you want to find out more about it, you feel free to just join the street epistemology Facebook group. But what we're about is listening to each other's attempts and trying to give positive critique and criticism, because we care about trying to get people to get better at this. And that's the only way that we would ever get better. It's by having friends who are willing to stick their necks out and say, actually, I think maybe this could improve it. And then people saying like, okay, I'm going to internalize that. Maybe I won't follow all the advice, but I'm going to keep that in my head and say thank you and move on and hopefully use that advice in a better way in the future.
Well, here's something that you just touched on when you said apathy. Now, we don't even have a fraction, minuscule fraction of the time to cover it, but something to think about maybe for future shows, and I'd like to at some point call in or something when I'm moved out of the area, is you said apathy, right? Now, I think there's just so much room to talk about and critique the aspect of apathy itself. And then talk about empathy and its effects on society from a, you know, anthropological perspective of the effects over time, who's in power, what effect does it have, low information, all these things, right, go into how we reciprocate. And it's a fundamental difference in empathy. And the proactive you know, it's more directly apathy sometimes. Sometimes people distinctly do not want to partake in anything because they lack, you know, the level of empathy that other people have. And, you know, you find that right. across people in religions, out of religions, all over the place. And so that's just like, you know, a universal language almost, empathy. You know, we are social creatures. And it's just something to think about, maybe how it affects, you know, we're out there, you know, Doubter, you're out there, you know, Wombat, you're out there. We care. And so people stop by to talk with us. They care also. So that's
right.
That's just something that it's something I can always circle back to over and over and over again with infinite fuel, I think.
When you were talking about apathy, though, and what application are you talking about, on like the side of the atheist or the side of the loyal opposition, or just general society apathy, or what do you mean?
Yeah, general apathy in the sense of, you know, I actively am disregarding what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there. All I'm concerned is what happens in my life. You know, that's the kind of general apathy. And, you know, and people can be intellectually convinced one way or another,
but not engaging.
Right. And that, I think that is a very big divide as well, and, you know, in various communities.
Well, I'm sure. Especially, like, if you think about voting, the young people in college nowadays, I mean, excuse me, there was a man on the street type of thing where he approached a bunch of college students at a bus stop. Said, how many of y'all going to vote? And not a single one put their hand up. And he tried to shame them into coming back at him,
for some reason.
But, I mean, it was just generally apathetic about the political system.
Yeah.
You know that they've got to care, but they're not going to do it.
Well, and in a situation
go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No,
in
fine.
A situation where they could vote, but they don't, they have just as much effect, maybe even worse of effect than an opposing party voting in their place. So that's why it's important for, you know, like we try to dismiss apathy and encourage people to like give their feedback, give their votes. And like if they can listen to people and offer their thoughts and represent themselves well. I think all of these like feed into each other.
It's true. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. Final words, y'all?
Well, first, so as always, be well, do good, and think critically.
Well, that didn't take up a minute.
Yeah, and vote.
Vote,
yeah,
for sure. Wombat?
In 2 weeks, I'm going up to Cincinnati to speak at American Atheists.
Nice.
About how to talk to people about sensitive beliefs, and we're going to try to do it in the nicest way possible.
I would like to attend that by conference or somewhere.
Yeah,
yeah, very cool.
No, I'll be recording and getting on my channel.
Very nice.
I wish you the best of luck up there. And this is Doubter 5. Remember that everybody's going to some other person's hell. Don't sweat it. The time to worry about it is when they prove that hell and heaven and souls are real. If you don't got a soul, it's not going anywhere when you die. And I'm one of those that believe that you don't have a soul, or that we don't. And when we die, we die. Nobody knows any different. They may tell you different, but they don't know any different. So if y'all say bye, we'll sign on off.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye, y'all. This is Doubter 5, Digital Free Thought Radio, 7 o'clock next week. We'll see you on WOZO Radio. Take care until then. Bye.
listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.